All right, we're going to go to Genesis chapter 46. And this is class 13 of 13. We'll finish up here tonight. Do you remember last time we got together that Joseph had revealed himself to his brothers after he played some head games with them? And they came into the land of Egypt to buy food. Joseph was put second in command, second only to Pharaoh, in charge of food. There was going to be a famine, a seven-year famine after 7 years of plenty. And his brothers came down to buy food. He knew his brethren, and then but he didn't reveal himself at first, and he played games with them by putting the money back in their sacks and then taking one of their brothers hostage and then demanding that they come back. And then when they left again, he hid his cup in their bags and all that, and they came back, and finally he couldn't refrain anymore, and he revealed himself that he was their brother, and he asked them to go and bring their father back. And so that's where we pick it up in chapter 46 and verse number 1. 46:1 says, "And Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices unto the God of his father Isaac." So Jacob here has his priorities right. He's taking care of God's business first before he goes any further. Verse 2, "And God spake unto Israel in the vision of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, Here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation." So specifically, God tells him not to fear to go to Egypt, and that might be because Jacob was unsure because of Abraham and Isaac's bad experiences and warning before him not to go there. Verse number 4, he says, "I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again, and Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes." All right, so he tells us, go into Egypt, and I will go down with thee. And we are in the world in Egypt, and we are safe in the world as long as we have God with us and guiding us. Okay, as long as God is by our side. And that will be Romans chapter 8, verse 31 there as a cross-reference.
What shall we then say, we think? If God be for us, who can be against us?
All right. And no matter what we do, where we go, if God be for us, who can be against us? So he even promises to bring him up. Now, he was buried, Jacob was buried in Israel. So his body would come up out of there, and his offspring, certainly descendants, would come out of Egypt years later. Verse 5 says, "And Jacob rose up from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry him. And they took their cattle and their goods, which they had gotten in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt." All right, so this is a fulfillment of Genesis 15:13, where God tells him that his seed would go down into a land, or actually tells Abraham that his seed would go down into a land where they would be strangers and would be there for 430 years. Verse 8, and it says, "And these are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt, Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, the sons of Reuben, Hanok and Phalu and Hezron and Carmi, the sons of Simeon, Jemuel and Jamin and Ohad and Jachin and Zohar and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman, and the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, the sons of Judah, Aaron, Onan, and Shelah, and Perez, and Zerah. But Aaron, Onan died in the land of Canaan." That's Genesis 38. "And the sons of Perez were Hezron and Hemuel. The sons of Issachar, Tola, and Puva, and Job, and Shimron. The sons of Zebulun, Sarah, and Elon, and Jahleel. These be the sons of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob in Padan Aram with his daughter Dinah. All the souls of his sons and his daughters were 30 and 3. The sons of Gad, Ziphion and Hagi, Shunai, Nisbon, Arai, Erodai, and Arali. the sons of Asher, Jimnah, and Ishua, and Isuai, and Beriah, and Sirah, their sister, the sons of Beriah, Heber, and Melchiel. These are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and these she bare unto Jacob, even 16 souls. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin, and unto Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. These are going to be two tribes. Which Aseneth, the daughter of Potipherah, priest of On, bare unto him. The sons of Benjamin were Bela and Baker and Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Mupim, Hupim, and Ard. Blinkin, blinkin, and nod. Hupim, Hupim, and Ard. These are the sons of Rachel, which were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14, and the sons of Dan, Hushim, the sons of Naphtali, Jehiel, and Gunai, and Jezer, and Shillim. These are the sons of Bilhah, which Laban gave unto Rachel his daughter, and she bare these unto Jacob. All the souls were 7. All the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66, or 66. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were 2 souls. All the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70, or 70. Now, we have a problem text, which is Acts chapter 7. So if you want to flip there real quick. Acts chapter 7, verse 14. Acts 7, 14. It tells us, then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him, and all his kindred, 65 souls. 65 souls, or 75 is the number given for all his kindred in Acts 7:14. Now, you've heard of, you may or may not have heard of what the Septuagint. Septuagint is a what is the Septuagint? What is it? No, not the first 5 books. Alexandrian manuscripts? Yes. Thank you. All right. It is a Greek, an alleged Greek translation of the Old Testament. Now, the Old Testament was written in what language?
Hebrew.
Hebrew. All right. So, anyway, to get this straight, the Septuagint was supposedly written 300 B.C., roughly. But, you know, 3rd century B.C., 300 before Christ, or before the New Testament was completed. Some evidence like this would suggest that it could have been more like after the New Testament was completed, so maybe 300 A.D. versus 300 B.C. But anyway, the point is, a lot of times you'll see in margins of the Bible or whatever, or you'll hear in commentaries that the Septuagint says this, like it's supposed to be a credible translation of the Old Testament, because it was in Greek. But there are those that also say they think that the whole thing is a phony. And there really is little evidence that this thing was really written 300 B.C. So it doesn't necessarily have to be credible. But my point in this text is the Septuagint changes this verse, verse 27, where it says that all the souls of the house of Jacob which came into Egypt were 70. They changed this verse to read 75. Now, the reason they would do that is to try to match Acts 7:14, which says 75, okay? Which is a sneaky suspicion to me that they had access to New Testament books, so it probably wasn't written before the New Testament. It was written after the New Testament. So they had access to Acts 7:14 and said, Acts 7:14 says 75, so we better change this. And the way they do it is they transferred 5 names from 1 Chronicles chapter number 7 and added them to this chapter, to Genesis chapter 46. All right, so what we have to do, though, is reconcile this verse, 66 and 26, 70 and 27, and 75 in Acts 7:14. This is just a sneak preview of problem text that's coming up here in the spring. This is what you do. You solve alleged contradictions in the Bible. Okay, solve this contradiction. 60 is a 66, is a 70, or is a 75? Which is it? Because they seem to contradict. So anyway, this is one solution, and it certainly doesn't have to be the only solution. But the 66 from verse 26 would be those that came with Jacob from his own loins. In verse 27, you would add Jacob, Joseph, Manasseh, and Ephraim to equal 70. The 75 from Acts 7:14 might include wives of Jacob's sons who were kindred, but not from his loins, because of how it's worded. Some are from his loins, some are his kindred. Okay, but the point is this. However you can reconcile this, there's a solution. If you come at it with there's a solution to matching 70 and 75, in other words, it's not a contradiction, it's just that you're counting maybe different people or your wording's a little bit differently. Okay? But you don't have to say, well, there's a big mistake here, and we better transfer, you know, five names from 1 Chronicles chapter 7 and Adam chapter 46 so we make sure there doesn't look like there's a mistake in the Bible. Okay? There's always a mistake. There's always a alleged error in the scriptures, but you have to give God the benefit of the doubt, and then you can try to find a solution. Sometimes you won't find a solution, but you'll at least be at peace saying, "I know there's a solution. I just don't know what it is." All right. It depends on your whole approach to problem texts. All right. You can find. I'll tell you what. I can pick apart. We can find a lot of mistakes in here if you want that look like mistakes. And then we could just say, you know, those are mistakes, scribal errors and all this other stuff. Or you can say, you know, I don't believe the Bible to have any errors in it. I believe it to be perfectly preserved. And then you would say, this is one of the solutions to the 70 and the 75. But always give God the benefit of the doubt. Okay? So just remember, verse 27 to 70, Acts 7:14 uses the terms a little bit differently, and they have 75 people. Verse 28. Any questions about that? You follow? All right, verse 28 says, "And he sent Judah before him unto Joseph to direct his face unto Goshen, and they came into the land of Goshen. And Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel his father to Goshen and presented himself unto him. And he fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while." I imagine so. Because that would be quite a family reunion, wouldn't it? Joseph went to meet his kindred, and Jesus Christ is going to meet us in the air. And I don't know what our reunion will be like, but I think it'll be a great one, don't you? You get to meet Jesus someday? Wow. All right. Jacob is restored after a lot of tribulation in his life. Joseph is alive. Simeon's out of prison. Benjamin is out of danger. And it's kind of like Job's story at the end. The pictures, Israel restored to God, restored to Christ after the tribulation. Verse 30, it says, "And Israel said unto Joseph, Now let me die, since I have seen thy face, because thou art yet alive." All right, so we know that Genesis 46, verse 4, we read earlier that basically God said that Joseph would be at his bedside. His hand would cover his eyes. So when he sees him finally, Joseph just says, "Let me die. I'm happy that you're alive and all is well." Verse number 31, "Joseph said unto his brethren and unto his father's house, I will go up and show Pharaoh and say unto him, My brethren and my father's house, which are in the land of Canaan, are come unto me, and the men are shepherds, for their trade hath been to feed cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds, and all that they have. And it shall come to pass, when Pharaoh shall call you, and shall say, What is your occupation? That ye shall say, Thy servant's trade hath been about cattle from our youth even until now, both we and also our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians." And he's encouraging them, you know, we're going to tell them the truth, but make sure you let them know that it's cattle, because the Egyptians worshipped the calf, and the Israelites didn't have as much respect for the sacred cow, if you will. And the Egyptians didn't like shepherds. That, remember, that if that's a picture of the world and Satan's system versus Christ and his system being the chief shepherd and being sheep being Christians. And they didn't like, you know, the blood of the lambs being shed and all that. So there was a little bit of a difference because he says, shepherds are an abomination to the Egyptians. It just wasn't their way of worship or doing things. All right, so he tells them here to make sure that you tell them your trade has been cattle. And it was, but he doesn't tell them anything about shepherding sheep, does he? Because apparently that wasn't looked upon the same way for the Egyptians. Okay? But he wanted them to be accepted in Pharaoh's eyes is really what he was trying to do here. All right, chapter 47. 47. Then Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brethren in their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, behold, they are in the land of Goshen." But he took some of his brethren, even five men, and presented them unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto his brethren, "What is your occupation?" They said unto Pharaoh, "Thy servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." So, in verse number 3, either they're not concerned about what Pharaoh thinks. I'm not really sure, but he says, we're shepherds, both we and also our fathers here. And maybe it was because they were trying to convince them they were shepherding over cattle. I don't know. Verse 4 says, "They said moreover unto Pharaoh, for to sojourn in the land are we come, for thy servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan. Now therefore we pray thee, let thy servants dwell in the land of Goshen." All right, so they're talking about sojourning. Remember, we've always said there's a difference between sojourning and dwelling. Sojourning implies a temporary stay. Dwelling implies that you're there to stay for good. And I'm not sure that they started out with the intent of staying there as long as they did. But they did stay a long time in Egypt. Verse 5, "And Pharaoh spake unto Joseph, saying, Thy father and thy brethren are come unto thee. The land of Egypt is before thee. In the best of the land make thy father and brethren to dwell. In the land of Goshen let them dwell. And if thou knowest any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle. And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and set him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh." So Joseph presents his relatives to the king. All right, and he stands before him, and Jacob blesses him. Pharaoh said unto Jacob, "How old art thou?" Jacob said unto Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers than the days of their pilgrimage." Now that's kind of a negative thing to say, isn't it? Few and evil have been my days. He's saying, I haven't lived a long, good life. It's been compared to my father, it's been a short, evil life. And his testimony certainly wasn't impressive here, but it looks like it's an honest one and maybe a great improvement on the character of Jacob that we've seen. But he is 130, Abraham was 175, Isaac was 180. So that's what he's comparing it to. Jacob himself would live to 147 years old. All right, so at this point, this puts Joseph between 37 and 39 years old, or roughly thereabouts. Now, the evil he talks about, think about his life that we've seen, Jacob's life. He had to leave his mother and father forever, basically, or his mother forever, and worked 20 years in the fields all night in freezing weather. He watched his wife die in childbirth. His son commits adultery with his wife. His sons are murderers. Joseph is sold out into slavery. Simeon is put in prison, and there it went through several years of famine. So it's not necessarily a great life for Jacob. And he says that. All right? So he says, few and evil. You know, and you think of Paul the Apostle saying, "Man, I've fought the good fight. I'm ready to be offered. The time of my departure is at hand. There's crowns waiting for me." And Jacob says, few and evil. have been my days. Interesting perspective, isn't it? Okay. Go ahead, Rob. Yeah. And Solomon felt that way, didn't he? And I think it just depends on your perspective as far as, you know, fearing God and keeping the commandments and things like that. You know, I mean, Solomon was way off, way away from God making those statements toward the end of his life. And, you know, Jacob, he just had a lot of turmoil in his life. Verse 10, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. All right, so he meets him face to face, head on. He doesn't cower, he doesn't negotiate, he doesn't scheme. Jacob just, you know, flat out, this is the way it is to Pharaoh. Verse 11, and Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families. All right, so Joseph provides his family with sustenance like Christ provides, Joseph, a type of Christ, providing his family, his spiritual family, with sustenance. Verse 13, there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was very sore, so that the land of Egypt and all the land of Canaan fainted by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when the money failed in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth. And Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail. And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses and for flocks, and for the cattle of the herds and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year. When that year was ended, they came unto him a second year and said unto him, we will not hide it from my lord, how that our money is spent. My lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our lands. Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread. We and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed, that we may live and not die, that the land be not desolate. So what you have here is a welfare system of sorts, probably in like in the tribulation where the mark of the beast will be implemented, I suppose, in some ways. But this is a famine. People are going to have to sell their very own selves to be able to eat here. Okay. 20. And Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, for the Egyptians sold every man his field, because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. Only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and he'd eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their lands. Then Joseph said unto the people, behold, I have bought you this day in your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land. All right, so Joseph supplies the seed for the sower. Okay, and I suppose you could put a type of Jesus there. We're sowers, right? And Jesus gives us the seed and says, now go out and sow because you belong to me, I own you. And doesn't he? Okay, bought with a price, right? Verse 24, and it shall come to pass in the increase that you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food for your little ones. All right, so basically, this is a flat tax of 20%, fifth part. And probably much fairer than our system. There were no hidden taxes anyway. Don't you love all the hidden taxes? Wouldn't you love to just be able to keep 80%? I mean, what are we in a Social Security for at least 15, right? So, I mean, you're talking about 20% and keeping 80. This is like a flat tax of 20%.
council member for every percent.
I bet you know that very well, don't you?
That's where the 50% came from when you just said that.
Yeah.
An employee,
split with an employer.
Employee pays, what, 7.5?
7.5, yeah. So, anyway, somebody's getting it. We're not. Verse 25, and they said, "Thou hast saved our lives. Let us find grace in thy sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants." All right, so Joseph, they accredit Joseph for saving their lives, and certainly we would accredit Christ for saving ours. And the servants here, the people gave all to Joseph so far. They've given him their money, their land, their possessions, and their own selves. Now, in a Christ-type relationship, we would claim here Romans 12, 1 and 2, "I beseech you therefore, brother, by the mercy of God, you present your body to live in what?
Sacrifice."
Okay? So that's your own selves. Right? And then we have another verse that goes along with that, talking about the Church of Corinth. 2 Corinthians 8, 5. All right. The church there is the Christians there Paul's talking about are the ones that first gave their own selves. They gave their selves. All right. You won't have a problem getting a Christian to do anything if they first give their own selves to the Lord. If they are resolved to give their own selves to the Lord and realize everything they have is the Lord's, then they're going to tithe, and they're going to be in ministry, and they're going to just give God whatever. That's not going to be a problem. But when we hang on to some of those things, you have to ask the question, I wonder if they're really giving their own selves unto the Lord. It's a, remember, it is a sacrifice of Christian service. All right, so these people are, now, I mean, spiritualize this verse for us in 25. "Thou hast saved our lives. We'll be Pharaoh's servants." That would be like, "Jesus, you saved my soul. I'll give you anything." Right? It don't make sense, doesn't it? Where would we be without Jesus, right? All right, verse 26. "And Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt unto this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's. Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly." All right, we'll cross-reference a couple verses here. They grew and multiplied exceedingly. We know that from Exodus. Exodus 1:7 and then 12:37.
"And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly."
Okay, 12:37.
"And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot, of men besides children."
Okay, so we have the increase here. Now he came down with, tells us 70 people or thereabouts, 70, 75. And when they leave for the Exodus, they've got 600,000 men. A lot of people. And God just kept increasing them and multiplying them. Okay. All right, verse number 28. "Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the whole age of Jacob was 147 years. And the time drew nigh that Israel must die, and he called his son Joseph and said unto him, If now I have found grace in thy sight, put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh, and deal kindly and truly with me. Bury me not, I pray thee, in Egypt. But I will lie with my fathers, and thou shalt carry me out of Egypt, and bury me in their burying place. And he said, I will do as thou hast said. And he said, Swear unto me. And he sware unto him, and Israel bowed himself upon the bed's head." All right, so he bowed himself upon the bed's head. Take a look at the book of Hebrews here. Hebrews 11:21. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 21, speaking of Jacob here, It says, by faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. So he worshipped. This isn't hard to figure out. He blesses late. He's going to bless the sons of Joseph. He's going to worship, and then he's leaning upon the top of his staff because he's old and frail. You follow? Now, what happens is some people mess around with these verses because they read here that he leaned upon the top of his staff, and then 47, the end of 47, it says he bowed himself upon the bed's head. So people are that justify idols as an aid to worship will use these. In the Hebrew, the word bed and staff are very close in spelling, like one letter off, apparently. All right? Mida, mada. All right? I don't know Hebrew. I'm just going by what I read. They're close in spelling. If that's true, some believe that bed in this passage, 47:31, he bowed himself upon the bed's head. They change it to the staff. Okay? Should be staff. So he bowed himself upon the staff's head.
In case somebody gets confused, it's in the Bible.
It ends with any prayer unto him.
Okay. Sorry. You didn't get your $15 worth. I don't know what to tell you. All right.
Write it in.
Yeah, write it in. All right. Some believe that the bed in this passage should be staff, matching Hebrews 11:21. But remember, in what we're reading here, there's not worship going on. He bowed himself upon the bed's head, right? He's old, he's tired, he's frail. He's not worshiping as Hebrews 11:21 tells us. Hebrews 11:21 is referring to the next chapter, which we're going to read in 48:14, when he blesses Manasseh and Ephraim. That's when he blesses them, he leans on his staff, and he worships there. Not worshiping his staff. He's not worshiping here in 47:31, all right, because he bows his head. Anyway, again, the staff, in God's system, the staff would not be used in worship anyway. That would be an idol, all right? But it would be only to lean on. See, we're Hosea 4:12, I think, mentions staff in there somewhere.
If my people as counsel at their stocks, and their staff declareth unto them, for the spirit of whoredoms hath caused them to err, and they have gone a-whoring from under their God.
All right, so they did use staffs in pagan worship. All right, they inquired at them. So that's where it would probably lead people to mess around with the Bible. Satan's attack on the Bible. But this again, the Septuagint is said to change here, change 47:31 from bed to staff because it was written in Hebrews 11:21 that way, which would lend credibility to, again, the Septuagint was written after the New Testament, not before the New Testament. You follow? Because they would have had access to the New Testament book. So far, they've made two changes, one in Acts and one in Hebrews. So anyway, for what it's worth for that. All right, any questions there? All right, chapter 48. 48, verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, behold, thy father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee. And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. All right, and this is probably where he uses his staff to help him get up and all that. Verse number 3, and Jacob said unto Joseph, God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me. And said unto me, behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people. And I will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt, before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. So he claims them for his own in place of Reuben and Simeon. All right, in the birthright and all that. All right, we've looked at some of this before, but let's just as a reminder. Manasseh and Ephraim are going to take Reuben and Simeon's place. Let's review. Genesis 34:25.
And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males.
All right, remember that? Simeon and Levi killed all the males that had defiled their sister. Remember? All right, Jacob wasn't happy about that. All right, then Genesis 35:22.
And it came to pass when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with father's concubine, and Israel heard it. Now the sons of Jacob were 12.
All right, so Reuben lays with his father's concubine, commits adultery. All right, that kind of puts a black mark on him as to the birthright and the blessings. All right, then 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 and 2.
Now,
all right, so that tells us the birthright is given to Joseph. That's now, so we read in verse 5 again, here's what happens. He says, your sons are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. All right, so he's taking them on his own as far as the birthright and the blessings go. Okay, verse number 6. And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of the brethren in their inheritance. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan. In the way, when yet there was but a little way to Ephrath, I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem. It's almost like he's remembering her death and saying, when yet there was but a little way to come to Ephrath, almost like, man, if we could have just made it there, she might have survived. You know, we were just close there. But anyway, she died there, as we know, and he buried her. Verse 8, and Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? They may have entered the room. His eyesight was failing. Who are these? Joseph said unto his father, they are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now, this is looking vaguely familiar, isn't it? Remember Isaac wanted to bless Esau, Jacob went in, all that. Okay, think about that as we read here. All right, verse number 10. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God has showed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, which is an acknowledgement that God kept his part of Genesis chapter 28 when he was at Bethel, and he prayed, Lord, if you do this, if you sustain me, if you bring me back here, I'll serve you. He's acknowledging this, that he did that. He fed me all my life long unto this day. The angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads, and let my name be named on them. In the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. All right? So Joseph, to do this the way he wanted, crosses his hands up. Okay? And Joseph says, no, they go this way. Okay? And Jacob says, no, we're going to do it this way. All right? And it's not... Armstrong and British Israelism teaches that this, you know, the British flag,
this is what they teach the British flag is, that he's crossing his hands like this. And that's nonsense.
But anyway, that's what they teach, just for what it's not worth to you. All right, verse number 18. And Joseph said unto his father, "Not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head." And his father refused and said, "I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations." All right, so like his father Isaac, Jacob is nearly blind, blessing the two boys, knowing it's not how it should be done, but he's doing it this way. Now, whether he's justifying what happened in his life, Genesis chapter 25 and the prophecies there, Genesis 27 when this all took place, I don't know. But if you think about it, the younger in the scriptures, Seth was blessed. Cain was cursed. He was older than Seth. Seth was blessed, Adam and Eve's kids. Isaac and Ishmael. Isaac was the younger. Of course, Jacob and Esau. And now it's Ephraim and Manasseh. Ephraim does turn out to be greater. His name is used collectively for the 10 northern tribes. We call the 10 northern tribes Israel, but also referred to as Ephraim. Okay? The tabernacle is set up in Shiloh, which is in Ephraim. Joshua comes from Ephraim. Now, half of Manasseh gets split up and they end up settling outside of the land. So Ephraim does become greater. Verse 20, "And he blessed them that day, saying, In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, Behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers." All right, so Israel says to Joseph, "I'm going to die. God will be with you, but he'll bring you again to the land of your fathers." Now, Joseph dies and is buried, or he dies in Egypt, and then later on when they come out, his bones are carried out. All right? When Jacob dies, they go and they bury, we'll read about that, they go and they take him in the land and they bury him. When Joseph dies, he's going to stay there for a couple hundred years until they carry out his bones. That's fulfilled in Exodus 13:19. I wonder why I put that there. All right, can someone grab that? Okay, God will surely visit you. You'll carry out my bones. And that was fulfilled in Exodus 13:19. Actually, I've skipped a couple. We'll get back to that in a minute. Verse 22, "Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow." No record of that. It's either the portion of spoils and goods from somebody, or it ties into the extra tribe in the land that he gives them one portion above his brethren. And talking to Joseph, you'll get one portion above your brother, whether it's one extra tribe or just spoils and goods. Okay, but what I wanted to point out, and I missed here, is verse number 12, when he bowed, he is thankful. This is kind of a prayer of thanksgiving. He is thankful that he could see not only his son, but his son's sons. All right? And I wanted to just read a couple of verses on that. Philippians 4:6, if anybody had gotten those from before. Philippians 4:6. All right? Be careful for nothing, but our prayer should be with thanksgiving. Okay? Colossians 4, verse 2.
Continue in prayer and watch in thanksgiving.
So a lot of times prayer is tied in with thanksgiving.
I will enter thy courts with praise, right? But what else does that verse say? With thanksgiving in my heart. Okay?
So, anyway, I sense that this is a very humble and thankful Jacob on his deathbed as to being able to see these boys and be able to bless them and all those things that we see here. All right? Any questions or anything about that?
Well, he lived quite a while, right, after he got into Egypt.
You know. He lived 17 years. Yep, 17 years in Egypt. Yep, even though he thought he was going to die right away, it seems he thought that. But he was able to be blessed with 17 years of time with Joseph.
Just an anger, too. The whole
idea. Yeah, and it took... Like, yeah, it's a good point. Later. Sure. It's good. Gracie?
In your notes, it says 25 years old.
Those aren't my notes, so I don't know.
They were about 25
okay.
years old.
All right.
But then when you're reading, it calls them lads, and it says...
Chapter 49. Verse number 1. And Jacob called unto his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. So this is a prophecy to his sons that will be fulfilled... In the last days of time. Verse 2 says, gather yourselves together, and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Right? He was supposed to be those things as the firstborn. However, verse 4 says, unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defiledst thou it, and he went up to my couch. All right, so unstable as water. They say water, you know, water seeks its own level. And Reuben would not produce, he didn't produce a ruler, a prophet, a judge, a priest, or a king. In fact, when we compare Numbers 121 and Numbers 26:7, they decreased, although slightly, they decreased in population. All right? Numbers, who's got Numbers 121? Go ahead.
Those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Reuben, were 46,500.
46,500. Numbers 26,700?
These are the families of the Reubenites. And they that were...
All right, 43,700 from 46,500. Usually, tribes would increase. All right? Which is interesting, they'd decrease. So they would decrease, they would settle outside of the land east of the Israeli borders and be the first, because of that, they would be the first to go into the captivity. The Assyrian captivity and the Babylonian captivity. When they came and got the northern tribes, Assyria, well, guess who they got first, all right? Reuben's tribe. 2 Kings 10:32-33.
In those days the Lord began to cut Israel short. And he smote them and all the kings of Israel, from Jordan eastward, all the land of Gilead, the Manassites, from Arnon, even Gilead and Bashan.
All right, so they went into captivity when God started to cut, the Bible says they started to cut Israel short. And Reuben was there. Reuben's material blessings went to Joseph. His priestly blessings would have gone to Levi. And the kingly blessings went to Judah. Okay? 49 verse 5. It says, Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. Referring to Genesis 34:25. Again, when they smote those men that defiled their sister. But he remembers this even up to his death. Simeon and Levi are brother instruments of cruelty, he calls them. Verse 6, O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. In other words, violence against someone else's property. But he says, come not thou into their secret. He doesn't want any part. Again, he absolves himself from the crime like he did before. I don't want anything to do with this. Okay? Verse 7. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. So Jacob, when he says, I will, he speaks for God in his when he prophesies here. I'll divide them. Simeon would be the smallest of the tribes with no true inheritance. Moses bypasses them in Deuteronomy 33. They would get a small portion in Joshua chapter 19, verses 1 and verse number 9. And they absorb, Simeon absorbs into Judah. Now Levi comes the priestly line, but Levi would get no inheritance other than cities. You know how the priests were left with different cities, all right? But they really had no portion of the land to call their own other than some cities. All right, so anyway, that's part of the judgment on them. Verse 8, Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? And we're talking, of course, about Revelation chapter 5 when dealing with Judah. Revelation 5:5.
And one of these elders saith unto me, weep not, behold, the lion of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, hath prevailed to open the book and to loose the seven seals thereof.
The lion of the tribe of Judah, Jesus Christ, comes from Judah. That's the blessing that he is known for. Verse number 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. So there's a prophecy of Christ. The scepter, first of all, and we're going to look at some references about the scepter. Numbers chapter 24, verse 17.
I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not mine. There shall come a star out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall smite the quarters of Moab, and destroy all the children of Sheth.
All right, so a star and a scepter, talking about Christ. And then Revelation 12:5.
And she brought forth the man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up unto God and to his throne.
All right, so that scepter, that rod of iron, Revelation 19:15.
And out of his mouth goeth a sharp sword, that with it he should smite the nations, he shall rule them with a rod of iron, and he shall smite them with the fiercest and wrath of the
Lord. All right, so rules. Again, Christ comes back and rules. And then, till Shiloh come in verse 10. Shiloh means peace bringer. And you know Christ brings peace. That's his millennial kingdom, right? That's the peace bringer, all right? But also, as far as you and I can remember, he reconciles us. Ephesians 2:13 and 14.
But now in Christ Jesus, he who sometimes was far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, he hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between them.
All right, we were far off, but we're reconciled to God through the blood of Christ. And he says, he's our peace. He's our peace. All right, so he's the peace bringer, Shiloh. And then we're talking about, in verse 10, the gathering there. Shall the gathering of the people be? I know it's church. I wouldn't name my church this. I know a church, though, called The Gathering. It's a Christian gospel preaching church. Now, that just sounds a little far out, doesn't it? The Gathering. I suppose this might be where they go. I don't even know where they go, why they do that. But anyway, The Gathering, we'll be gathered together unto him. Verse 10, the gathering of the people be. That's John 12:32.
And if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me.
Okay, Christ be lifted up, and he was on the cross, he'll draw all men unto him, the gathering unto him. Acts 15:14. All right, God did visit the Gentiles to take out a people for his name. Gather a people for his name. He gathers us at the rapture. Nations will gather to him in the millennial reign. Okay? So, Christ is about that. Verse number 11.
Verse 11.
again, of Christ. It says, binding his foal unto the vine, his ass's colt unto the choice vine. He washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. All right, so in verse 11, this is going to cover both advents, the first advent of Christ in his birth, and the second advent in Christ in his return. And we'll cross-reference some scriptures, Zechariah chapter 9, verse 9.
Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and heavy salvation. Lowly and riding upon an ass, and upon a colt, the foal of an ass.
All right, Christ riding on the foal of the ass there. Then Matthew 21, verses 1 through 5, tell us about that.
When they drew nigh into Jerusalem, and come to Bethphage, unto the Mount of Olives, they sent Jesus to his disciples, saying unto them, go into the village over against you, and straightway ye shall find an ass tied, and a colt with her. Loose them, and bring them unto me. If any man say aught unto you, ye shall say, the Lord hath need of them, and straightway he will send them. All this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, tell ye the daughter of Zion, behold, the king cometh unto thee, meek and sitting upon an ass, and the colt, the foal of an ass.
Right, so the prophecy of that being fulfilled in Matthew 21. Then the second coming, Isaiah 63, verses 1 to 3.
Who is this that cometh from Edom with bad garments from Bozrah, and this that is glorious in his appearance, apparel, trembling in the greatness of his strength? I have speaking righteousness, mighty to save. Wherefore art thou red in thine apparel? And thy garments lightning that treadeth in the winepress. I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me, for I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment.
Alright, so again, talking about that, in the coming of Christ, it says, he washed his garments in wine, his clothes in the blood of grapes. That's, he's trampling out that vintage. Where the grapes of wrath are stored, as we sing. And again, you see the association between blood and grapes, all right, which we talked about way back with what did they partake of, the forbidden fruit Adam and Eve partook of being a grape. All right, verse number, Revelation chapter 19, verse 15.
And out of his mouth goeth the sharp sword that he shall smite the and he shall roll them with a rod of iron, and he shall thunder the winepress of the bitterness and worship on my behalf.
All right, so the fierceness, the winepress being what we want to focus in on that verse there. Verse number 12 then, Genesis 49:12 says, his eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. All right, so when Christ returns, his eyes red like red with wine, he'll be like a drunken man, but he'll be drunk on the wrath of God. That's what he's drunk on. All right, the wrath of God. Psalm 75, verses 7 and 8.
For God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. For in the hand of the Lord there is a cup, and the wine is red. It is full of mixture, and he poureth out of the same. But the dregs thereof, all the wicked of the earth shall wring them out and drink them.
All right, so there's a cup of God, the wrath of God, that people will drink, partake of. Verse number 13, Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. Issachar is a strong ass, couching down between two burdens. And he saw that rest was good, in the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. All right, so the servant unto tribute that Issachar became was to the heathen nations by not driving them out, and as did the other tribes too. All right, they became a servant unto tribute. Verse 16, Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, this isn't good, an adder in the path, that biteth the horse's heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. Dan is the first tribe to go into apostasy. If you're familiar with Judges chapter 17 and 18, they really sound like a Roman Catholic system there in Judges 17 and 18. All right? You remember they get their own priests and they get their own idol that they worship there. Okay? It's an interesting comparison. So Dan goes into apostasy first. Verse number 18, I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Out of Asher, his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Naphtali is a hind let loose. He giveth goodly words. And this would be, think of the context of Naphtali, goodly words. There are two places in the context of Naphtali where they are goodly words about the Messiah. All right, you're familiar with Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah 9, 1 through 6.
Nevertheless, the vineyard shall not be such as was in her expectation. When at the first he rightly expected the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward did more grievous affect her by the way of the sea, beyond Jordan and the Galilee of the nation. The people that walked in darkness have seen a good light. They have dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them hath the light of shining. Thou hast multiplied the nation and not increased the joy. They joy before thee accordingly, according to the joy of heaven. And as men rejoice when they divide the spoil. For thou hast broken the yoke of his burden and the staff of his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, as in the day of Midian. For every battle of the warrior is with confused noise, and garments rolled in blood. But this shall be with the burning and fuel of fire. For unto his child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder. And his name shall be called the Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace.
All right, so those are goodly words about the Messiah and the restoration there. Unto us a child is born and a son is given. All right, then Matthew 4, 13 through 17, Naphtali should be listed in there as well.
In Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is upon the sea coast in the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea beyond Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. The people which sat in darkness saw a great light, and to them which sat in the region in shadow of death, light has sprung up. From that time Jesus began to preach and to say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand.
All right, so again, in context there, Zebulun and Naphtali, and goodly words spoken. Speaking of Christ and his coming there. 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. So in 24, we've got the stone mentioned here, which Christ is the good shepherd and the smiting stone. All right, from thence, see in verse 24, from thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. First, he's the shepherd, just in this order. He's the shepherd first, and then he's the smiting stone after that. Okay? 25 says, even by the God of thy father who shall help thee, and by the Almighty who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb, the blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. All right, so they're talking about in 26, the head of Joseph, that the blessings of the father upon the head of Joseph. So Joseph does pretty good in the long run, doesn't he? After being sold out, a servant, resisting temptations, put in jail, waiting on God, forgiving his brethren, ruling righteously, Joseph comes out on top here. 27, Benjamin, so raven as a wolf, In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. And I don't know if this is referring to Paul the Apostle, but Paul the Apostle was a Benjamin, wasn't he? And he divides the spoil. He's certainly the most famous Benjamite. And, you know, you got to think that he'll divide the spoil. He'll get an awful lot, won't he, at the judgment seat of Christ and the crowns and all that. But this tribe physically, literally, was known for their fighting power. The warriors, the left-handed warriors and all that, talks about with Benjamin. All right, they divide the spoil. Verse 28. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Every one according to his blessing, he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. Therefore they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife, or there they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife, there they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife, and there I buried Leah. So Jacob is going to be buried next to Leah, not, who was his other wife that he favored, right? Rachel. He buried her because she died on the way there to Bethlehem. But he ends up being buried next to Leah. And I don't know if this is an act of submission or what, but, you know, maybe he changed his perspective when it was all said and done. I don't know. Or maybe because the other patriarchs were buried there, that he decided to be buried there. 32. The purchase of the field and of the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed, yielded up the ghost, and was gathered unto his people. All right, so there's the end of Jacob there. You can see from chapter 49 that there's an awful lot said about the tribes and some prophecies. I'm sure there's a lot more there that you can find if you were to study what some of these statements that were made. Okay, that's just to give you an idea that there's a lot in that chapter about not only the tribes and how they would fare, but about Christ, tied into Jesus Christ in his first and his second coming. All right, chapter 50. And Joseph fell upon his father's face and wept on him and kissed him. And Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, and the physicians embalmed Israel. And 40 days were fulfilled for him, for so are fulfilled the days of those which are embalmed. And the Egyptians mourned for him 70 days. So we've got a long time here dragging this on. Imagine that. Isn't that a bummer when funerals get dragged on and all that? Okay? Just drags out the whole thing, the inevitable. Although they get better about that today than they used to. Verse number 4. When the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spake unto the house of Pharaoh, saying, If now I have found grace in your eyes, speak, I pray you, in the ears of Pharaoh, saying, My father made me swear, saying, Lo, I die. In my grave, which I have digged for me in the land of Canaan, there shalt thou bury me. Now therefore let me go up, I pray thee, and bury my father, and I will come again. And Pharaoh said, Go up and bury thy father according as he made thee swear. And Joseph went up to bury his father. With him went up all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt. And all the house of Joseph, and his brethren, and his father's house, only their little ones, and their flocks, and their herds, they left in the land of Goshen. There went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great company. And it came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond Jordan, and they mourned with a great and very sore lamentation, and he made a mourning for his father 7 days. When the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning in the floor of Atad, they said, This is a grievous mourning to the Egyptians. Wherefore, the name of it was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond Jordan. And his sons did unto him according as he commanded them. For his sons carried him in the land of Canaan, buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah, which Abraham bought with a field for possession of a burying place of Ephron the Hittite before Mamre. And Joseph returned into Egypt, he and his brethren, and all that went up with him to bury his father after he buried his father. So Joseph returns to Egypt. Someday Jesus Christ will return to Egypt too, won't he? Someday Jesus will return to the world to get his own. Verse 15, and when Joseph's brethren saw that their father was dead, they said, Joseph will peradventure hate us and will certainly requite us all the evil which we did unto him. And they sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, all right, now, I don't know that he did. It doesn't record that he commanded this. But they're probably lying, is my guess. Dad said to be nice to us before he died. You know what I mean? This kind of a thing. It was not recorded that he said that. Now, remember, 17 years had passed, and you would think that they would have felt a sense of vengeance or spite from Joseph, and I doubt Joseph just wasn't that kind. He was pretty good about the whole thing, like, God meant it for good, here we are, let's deal with it. And now their father dies, and he says the brother's guilty conscience again, knowing they did him bad years ago, are worried here. 17, look at Joseph's response. For so shall you say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee now, the trespass of thy brethren in their sin. For they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. Why do you think he wept? They didn't believe him, right? He was disappointed, wasn't he? After all that he did for them. And said he forgave them and tried to get them a new life and all that, and they come and say, we don't believe it. You're going to kill us, you know. He cried. He was disappointed.
That's a great picture of salvation, too. It can't be that easy.
Yeah. It's good. Yep. That's good. And, of course, we match John 11:35 with Jesus wept, didn't he? When Jesus wept, it was because of his brethren. It was because of Israel. He wept over the city. He wept, and Jesus wept. It was because of Lazarus. But again, it's the same. It's because of Israel. Lazarus, a picture of Israel there. And Joseph wept. Verse 18, and his brethren also went and fell down before his face. And they said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for am I in the place of God? He'd forgiven them already. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. And that's the perspective Joseph has on things. Keeping things in eternal perspective, that God allows things to happen that we don't like. And we would claim Romans 8:28 for that, right? Well, we would say, all things work together for good, right? To them that love God, to them that are called according to his purpose. Go ahead, Jim.
But Joseph went back and served the father for another, well, that 17 years. And his brothers and father were off. So maybe they grew apart a little bit.
Could be. All right.
Maybe
they just didn't have a close relationship with him. And that's a possibility. Good point. Right, but we know here that he says again, God meant it unto good to save much people alive. What about Acts 2:23-24?
And being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain, whom God hath raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it.
And that's referring to Christ and his death. They said, you know, the Jew, you delivered him up to be killed. But didn't that work out for the best for all of us, right? And that's God just seeing that the things can work out for the best. And I guess, you know, as far as practical application here, if you're born again, if you've gotten saved, however you got to the cross, and probably a lot of things happened bad in your life, you know, all of us at some point. As we look back on those things, maybe if they didn't go so bad, we wouldn't come to the cross. You think? You know, maybe if life was good, we wouldn't have got saved. And so we've got to keep that in mind, the eternal perspective. Especially people maybe we've had hold grudges or have problems or whatever in the past. Hey, I came to the cross, man, God meant it for good. I gotta just move on and forget this other stuff, you know? And just look at Joseph, what an example this guy is. They delivered him up to be killed, his own brothers. And he says, God meant it for good to save much people alive. And that's the other thing, spiritually speaking. If you and I have gotten saved, now the people we influence for Christ get saved, to save much people alive, right? So, move on, man. Move on with life. You know, if you've come to Christ, move forward. Move forward. Verse number 21. Now therefore fear ye not, I will nourish you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. And that would be Jesus' attitude toward us, even though we crucified him, our sin. He says, speak kindly unto us when we come to him. 22. And Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's house. And Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children of the third generation, the children also of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were brought up upon Joseph's knees. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you, and bring you out of this land, unto the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And he said, God will bring you out. God brought out Abraham out of it. Egypt. He brought Isaac out. He brought Jacob out. He'll bring Joseph out. He brought Israel out eventually. Jesus, he brought out. And those saved, he'll bring out. When we got saved spiritually, he took us out of Egypt. And then at the rapture, physically, we get to get out of Egypt once for all. All right? So anything from Egypt is no good. Because of the types and all the people that are brought out of Egypt, including the old Alexandrian manuscripts where the other Bibles come from. Those come from Egypt. All right? Not good.
I heard it, and I don't know how this fits, but Jesus and Joseph and Mary ran to Egypt when they were being spied.
Mm-hmm. Well, to fulfill a prophecy of out of Egypt I've called my son. He had to go there to fulfill that.
But there wasn't any value in them going there to escape persecution.
Well, they went there for a temporary place to escape. Just like Abraham did. Temporary sojourning in Isaac and Jacob. Everything was supposed to be a temporary sojourning. And I guess the typology, Annie, would be you and I are here. We're in Egypt. But don't dwell there. Sojourn here. And out of Egypt have I called my son. He calls everybody back out of Egypt. So there is some good to it in that you also can compare, can't you? Can you compare what it's like to live in Egypt, what it's like to live in Canaan, into the promised land, you know?
Well, Egypt wasn't under the Roman Empire, so...
At that time, yeah, exactly, yeah. And it, yeah, right. All right, and just as Israel went into bondage and they thought, man, we're never going to get out of here. The rapture's coming. It's coming. One of these days we are going to get out of here. Verse 25, and Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from hence. He says, I don't even want my bones here. That's fulfilled in Exodus 13:19. Jesus' bones are taken out of Egypt, if you will, out of the world, when he ascended. He didn't leave his bones here, did he? And Joseph didn't leave his bones in Egypt. Now, if the bones of any religious leader are found, their graves are found, it doesn't change their teachings one bit. But if Christ's bones are found, we're in big trouble, aren't we? We're in big trouble if he left his bones behind. Okay? All of Christianity would be false. We hang our hat on the resurrection. No other religions do that. We do it on the resurrection. And that's 1 Corinthians 15. Just to sum it all up. Who's got that passage? 12 through 19.
Now, if Christ you preach that he rose from the dead, how say some among you that there is no resurrection of the dead?
But if there is be no resurrection of the dead, then is Christ not risen? And if Christ be not risen, then is our preaching vain, and your faith is vain also. Yea, and we are found with false witnesses of God, because we have testified of God that he raised up Christ, whom he raised not up, if so be that the dead rise not. And if the dead rise not, then is not Christ raised. And if Christ be not raised, your faith is vain, ye are yet in your sins. Then they also which are fallen asleep in Christ are perished. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable.
Aren't we, though? All men most miserable without a resurrection. All right, then 26. So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him. He was put in a coffin in Egypt. So even though he is dead, it's still stated that they did something to him. Okay, I mean, think about it. He's dead. It says they embalmed him. Now, he's gone out of his body, right? But referring to his dead body, they embalmed him. Meaning, it's still your body. So you still better respect it at the burial or have it respected. All right? Don't get cremated. Don't get cremated. That's my charge to you. All right? If you have already know somebody that did or whatever, this doesn't count for them. All right? I didn't tell them that, but I'm telling you. All right, again, people have asked, go get an excellent book by David Cloud in the bookstore on cremation. Excellent booklet on it. All right? So, Joseph was embalmed, put in a coffin, a respectful burial. The book of Genesis that begins with a living God ends with a dead man. We've come a long way, haven't we? Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God. Genesis 50:26. They embalmed him, put him in a coffin in Egypt. Dead in the world. You see the type there? Quite a difference from the garden to now. We start in the garden, we end up in Egypt. All right? And that's everyone's future without Jesus Christ, is to end up in a coffin in Egypt. Jesus is the only one that can bring us out of Egypt. All right, in your notes I put a little study of seven outstanding men of faith: Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, their lives progressively typifying the life of a true Christian: spiritual desire, choice, renewal, faith, sonship, service, suffering, and glory. And that, my friends, is the book of Genesis.